casa.
Greetings, Xenophiles. Happy birthday to Keris Matthews, 55 today, and that's why you just heard her singing with Catatonia, Mulder and Scully. Mulder and Scully. On this day in 1471, King Edward IV of England seized London from Henry VI as part of the Wars of the Roses. Now, in my experience, the Wars of the Roses are still ongoing. I've got some stories which will demonstrate that. Not for now. It's not my story. In 1814, Napoleon Bonaparte abdicated unconditionally and was exiled to the island of Elba. Which reminds me of something my Uncle Ron, my dear old Uncle Ron, told me. He was trying to demonstrate to me what is a palindrome. And he said, well, here's a famous palindrome. Napoleon said, Abel was I ere I saw Elba. And for 20 years, I believed him. Then realised that Napoleon's French, he would not have said that. Makes no sense. On this day in 1912, RMS Titanic left Queenstown, Ireland for New York. And in case you didn't see the film, I won't tell you what happened next. See the film. 50 years ago in Brighton, England, this happened. What is it? Another Napoleon reference. ABBA won the European Song Contest and has parachuted them into the musical stratosphere. On this day in 1976, Apple One computer was created by Steve Wozniak. I wonder what happened to Apple. 11 years ago, fossilized dinosaur eggs with embryos were discovered in China, so I guess it's only a matter of time before Jurassic Park becomes a reality. On Monday, we sadly lost Peter Higgs, the particle physicist who postulated what became known as the Higgs boson. And then they built the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in order to try and find it, and they found it. Now, that Higgs boson was also known as the God particle. Talking of God, our guest this week, see what I did there?
Great.
The chaplain of the Church of the Resurrection in Bucharest, commonly known as the Anglican Church, next to Grădina Icoanei. Best behaviour, please, and welcome Father Nevsky Everett.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
But I'm glad you made it. The first question, right? The second question. I'll ask the usual first question. Right, we're going to go through the story in the four chapters as we always do. And the first question is always the same. And it's this: Father Nevsky Everett, who do you think you are?
Who do I think I am?
Who do you think you are?
Who do I think I am? I'm Nevsky Everett. I'm the chaplain of the Church of the Resurrection here in Bucharest.
The obvious next question is the name, Nevsky Everett. I know Everett, okay. I mean, one of my broadcasting heroes, well, Kenny.
Indeed.
Right. Yeah.
No relation.
Okay, but I don't know any other Nevsky.
No, you probably don't. I have a pretty unique name. My parents went on holiday to St. Petersburg shortly before I was born. And the Nevsky Prospect runs down through the centre of St. Petersburg.
Right.
So it's a holiday memento, Nevsky.
What imaginative way to name your child.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I should be called the Golden Mile Blackpool. According to that same logic, there we go. Such it is. Okay, let's cut to the story, and we'll now go with the usual. The first of the four chapters sounds a bit like this.
Expat life.
The rollback.
Tell me about your childhood.
So the man said, "Tell me about your childhood."
Well, I was born in 1989, a pretty momentous year. You know, I was born and then the Iron Curtain fell down. I don't think the events were connected.
You never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know. All in God's providence. I was born just north of London, and then before I really remember it, my parents moved to Welling Garden City in Hertfordshire.
Garden City, that's a contradiction in terms, isn't it?
I think the Garden City is a really interesting thing. There was a whole movement in the first part of the 20th century to build new towns in the UK which combined the best of town and country. So it was about giving people things like front gardens and space and trees.
Like people had before cities.
Indeed, exactly, exactly. And so there was a lot of clearance out of the slums of London, and people were sort of rehoused in these new towns, which were popping up in north of London.
Right. Yeah, so a slightly better environment to live in than the other type of new town. I'm thinking Milton Keynes.
Yeah, definitely. Bit more green.
Concrete cows in Welling Garden City.
Exactly, no. So it's, it was a nice place to grow up. And you always felt the countryside was close by, which was nice. And it was quite suburban in other ways.
Well, what kind of population are we talking?
I don't know, maybe 15,000 people.
Oh, not that many then.
Yeah,
you had space to breathe.
Yeah, not a huge mm-hmm. huge place. Maybe more, but not huge.
Okay, and so it wasn't sort of a middle and an edge. It was nicely evenly spread, so you were not a city boy, neither a tree climber, but something in the middle.
Exactly, something in the middle. So okay. A good place to be.
Mm-hmm. Nice. What were your parents doing?
My parents were both police officers in the officers in the Metropolitan Police. So, had an ordered upbringing. Knew what was expected.
I can imagine. So, yes. Rules and rules.
Rules and rules. But no, very, very good. All brilliant. I'm the oldest of three siblings. So I have a sister who's a couple of years younger. She's now a teacher, and my brother is 6 years younger than me, and he now works in a bank. So we've all gone quite different ways.
Very, yeah. Although teaching, there's a
exactly.
teaching aspect to what you do.
None of us went into the police.
That doesn't surprise me. I think, yeah, okay, enough already. Two policemen in the family is quite enough. So you, as you mentioned, you were the oldest of three. So did you feel that you were in charge?
Yeah, I think I probably did.
Mm-hmm. But was it true?
No, probably not. But I'm sure it's true for lots of older siblings that, you know, they feel that they know how things are.
Yeah, yeah, I have to ask my older sibling that question. he behaved like he was in charge.
Well, exactly. I probably did.
Okay,
I probably did.
Fair enough. And school. Now, school. See, some people really enjoy it. Some people just tolerate it and know that it's... What were you?
I quite liked school in sort of surprising ways. I was quite good at it.
It's surprising that you like it. That's the first surprising way.
Yeah, I was quite good at it. I was a sort of bookish child. Mm-hmm. My secondary school was quite unique, I think, probably. It was...
unique? Dodgy?
Dodgy. At the time, it was in special measures, which is sort of a category in English school systems.
See, this is very polite, isn't it? There's a nice polite way that the British say special measures, but full of thugs.
It was an interesting place to be. I remember one maths lesson where there weren't enough chairs to sit on in the classroom.
Because of what, budget cuts?
They'd been thrown out the window by somebody else.
Even better.
So it was an interesting school environment. But I did enjoy it. I was good at it, and I guess the biggest surprise is that I wasn't bullied more, being the sort of brainy, weirdly religious one.
I didn't have chairs thrown at you.
No, I didn't. I didn't. So I had a pretty happy time, really.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. And at this point, imagine you're sort of, you know, early teens, and it's a point when people start thinking, I want to be an astronaut, a doctor, a lawyer, a train driver, or what?
Yeah, I did. I think, so I was about 12 or 13 when I thought that I probably wanted to be a priest. And I grew up my family went to church, and we had some really good parish priests in the church I grew up in. And they were really good role models. And there came a point where I just thought that this was what I wanted to do, and I couldn't really imagine doing anything else. It just sort of seemed to click and to make sense.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never thought about anything else.
Would you have considered, I've heard people say it's like a calling?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I've never thought of anything else. It just seemed to make sense all through my life.
Wow. Okay. Good. Yeah. Now, I've never been to Welwyn Garden City, right? It's a name that you only hear once and you remember it forever. This one I did notice. I had some relatives who lived there and I never visited them. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. But it's, I think it was the idea of something called something Garden City. It always stuck in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to go there now, what's the first thing I should look for?
That's a good question. I haven't been there for a very long time. It used to have the shredded wheat factory.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
So I remember very vividly as a child, in order to get to the town centre, we had to drive over the railway bridge, and there was the factory by the railway bridge. And you'd get the really distinctive smell of roasting shredded wheat or something. And I can still smell it in my nostrils.
The smell is one of the most sort of memory-connected senses, isn't it?
It really is. So I can still...
Yeah, now I've got it there. I tell you, I'm sorry, mate, but I hated shredded wheat. My mum used to love it, and I just couldn't handle it.
No,
I was a Weetabix boy. The lack of sugar, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So the shredded wheat factory, which is no longer there, which is a shame.
But, and I think the building's still there, but it's probably not all that much to look at without the smell.
Should make it into a cereal museum or something like that. You know what? Clock's ticking, and it's time to play your first piece of music already. Mm. Imagine that. Time is flying. Enya, tell me about Enya and why may it be?
So this piece, may it be, comes from the Lord of the Rings soundtrack. It's the film that came out in 2001. I was about 12. And my grandparents had bought me a copy of the book maybe a year or so before that. And The Lord of the Rings was really sort of shaped my imagination as a young person, as a teenager. And it's the story of good over evil and
And it's a massively deep alternate universe that he created
it is,
there,
it's
right?
Completely absorbing, and you know, a whole history and language, and you know, it really chimed with a lot of things I was interested in. So,
right. Let's get a bit of Enya with May It Be. Let's listen.
May it be an evening star. May it be when darkness falls, your heart will be
Radio Gorilla.
Expat Life.
Money, money, money.
Welcome back. Gorilla is what you're listening to. Expat Life. Father Nevsky Everett. Named after a street in St. Petersburg, we discovered. That was really... Yeah, thank you. I can relax now.
Good.
So, the story. Yeah, you kind of realised quite early on the calling. This is what you wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So... Now, school. You finished your school. What's the next step? University, obviously, but how do you... What did you find? How do you go? It's not something I go to Newcastle University and do mining engineering. That's what I didn't do. So what did you do?
So I went to Gonville and Caius College in Cambridge, and my degree was called Anglo-Saxon, Norse and Celtic.
Anglo-Saxon, Norse and Celtic? Wow, you must have learned some new words.
I did, yeah, lots. It was a really interesting mix of history and language and literature, and it was partly that I knew I wanted to be a priest, and I was advised against doing theology as an undergraduate degree.
Wait, excuse me?
Yeah, because I'd have to do some more later.
Ah.
And so it was a chance to do something different and interesting. And
makes sense.
So I'm very glad I did. It was a fun degree. You know, there weren't many of us. There were only 30 in a year group.
Did you dissect the lyrics of the Led Zeppelin songs?
No.
Because they got a lot of their influences
from... Yeah, they have. No, and it's amazing to see where those influences have carried on. So it was good fun, and I learned a lot, and I've probably forgotten most of it.
But that's okay. You're allowed.
Yeah.
So then you graduate. So that was how long did you study?
Yeah, so that was 3 years. While I was doing my degree in Cambridge, I was going through the selection process for ordination as a priest in the Church of England. Just after I graduated, I went to what's called a selection panel, and started doing theology in...
Was it like being on The Apprentice?
It was a bit. It's really scary. You basically go and spend 2 days living with the people who are also going through this process.
Right.
And with the selectors.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they're watching you when you're eating. And
oh, no.
When you're praying. And, you know, you have all these meetings. And anyway, no, it's fine. It's
no place to hide.
No place to hide, exactly. Which I suppose is a good thing. Then I started doing theology back in Cambridge after that.
Mm-hmm. And so that's another X amount of years worth of studying.
Another 3 years, yeah.
Another three.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of studies.
So it's six years at Cambridge?
6 years in Cambridge.
So you must know the place inside out.
Yeah, I do, yeah. My wife's parents live there, and so it's where we go back to when we go to the UK, and so it feels like home.
Mm-hmm. And then so here are 6 years of 6 years of Cambridge under your belt, and suddenly now, okay, I'm graduated twice. The world is my oyster. What happens next?
So after I was ordained, which was in 2013, I had my first job, which, like with all clergy jobs, is a sort of training post. You go and spend 3 years alongside a more experienced priest, and you learn the ropes. You learn how to do baptisms and weddings and funerals, all the nuts and bolts of parish life.
Right.
And I was in the other Garden City, Letchworth Garden City, for that occasion.
But you mean there's another Garden
City? There is Letchworth Garden City. It was, wow, in fact, the world's first.
Okay.
And it even has the UK's first roundabout.
What, really?
It really does.
Oh, I'm going to have to go there.
Yeah, you should. You should go round it several times. Yep.
Marvelous. So Letchworth. And then, so this was 3 years of... So did you learn all of the you know, the... Do you still have to read from the book when it's a wedding? Or do you know it in your head now?
More or less know it in my head.
Yeah.
I always have the book just in case my mind goes blank. You know, you never want to get that wrong.
Did you ever get the names wrong?
I never have.
Because that's what I think, that's why they have writing the book.
Exactly. I always have a little slip of paper just mm-hmm. Tucked inside with the names on in case I think there's a danger of, mm-hmm. of a blank.
When was the first time you were allowed to like fly solo and do that thing?
Pretty early on. My training incumbent, the priest I was with, was pretty great. He'd been a plumber before he was ordained. And so he treated me like his plumber's apprentice. So I basically went, I went everywhere with him and learned the ropes like that, which was brilliant.
Wow. Now you've got the image in my head, the plumber. Great. It's an interesting way to think about it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
An apprentice is an apprentice is an apprentice, right?
Exactly.
Follow me and watch what I do.
Yep, absolutely.
And so then what happened after that? So you did that for 3 years?
That's right, yep. So 3 years, and by which I'd been married, and we had one of our three children. Once you get signed off from your training...
You missed a whole piece of the story.
I did miss a whole piece of the story.
I mean,
sorry about that. The
married bit. Because that leads on to something where I want you to describe the fact that you not only did Cambridge, you did Oxford, because that raises questions. So at a point, you went... Where were you? You were on a tour
That's
somewhere?
Right, yeah. So I met my wife, Claire, on a pilgrimage to Teze, which is a sort of monastery in the south of France. Every year, thousands of young people go and hang out around this monastery,
mm-hmm.
And chip into the sort of daily life and... it's a really remarkable place, we met as part of a group that were going there, and Claire was at Oxford at the time. I was in Cambridge, and so we spent a long time going backwards and forwards.
It's like someone from Liverpool going out with someone from Everton. Man City, Man United supporters. Was it instantly like this, or did it take time?
It was pretty instant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Always nice to know.
Yeah.
And so you were flipping between Oxford and Cambridge.
Mm, that's right. Yeah. So the X5 bus.
The X5, it's a BMW now. do you have a favourite?
Oxford or Cambridge?
Yeah. And you're allowed to not answer that if you're afraid to offend anybody.
I think Cambridge is a more beautiful city.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cambridge was my first love. You know, we lived in Oxford afterwards, but I like Cambridge best of all.
Right. And of course, Cambridge doesn't have serial killers like Oxford does, because, well, according to Inspector Morse, anyway.
Well, indeed, exactly.
As far as anybody left there.
Exactly.
So, clock ticks, why? And I want to play the second piece of music now.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, and now, Resurrects. Now, this is interesting, because here we are, conveniently placed in between the two Easters. Yeah?
Yep.
And... So tell me about this one. Now, there's too many artists to list unless you can remember them. Regina Coeli, tell me more.
So when I was, after my training post, I was chaplain of Keble College in Oxford, and Keble has an amazing chapel and a really wonderful choir. And so this is a recording by Keble Choir of a piece of Easter music. And I chose this to signify the amazing music that that I was surrounded with when we were living in Oxford.
Right. Okay. And before I play it, one final question about the Oxford Cambridge thing. When is the boat race? Who do you support?
I always support Cambridge.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
And if you listen to the podcast version, you get this all the way to the end. It pains me now to have to fade this, but, you know, the clock ticks.
Expat Life, powered by those beautiful people at Radio Gorilla.
Expat Life.
Chaotic. Quixotic. Exotic.
Welcome back. Expat Life, Father Nevsky Everett. Now, chaotic, quixotic, exotic describes Romania.
Definitely.
Sometimes describes the guest, but you can decide that. I'm not going to put that on you. Now, question. Did you ever finish your doctorate on Isaac the Syrian?
I did.
You did?
Yes. I started it when I was in my training parish and then carried on when I was in Oxford. And so I was doing it part-time, so it took 6 years. Mm-hmm. So I started it just before my daughter was born. And then, you know, she was... I've got a photo of her as a baby on my lap when I was starting. And, you know, a photo of her holding the thing.
As
she was six at the time.
Nice.
So, it took a while.
Yeah, well, but can we read it?
You can. It's online.
Where?
Yeah, just Google the title.
Okay, because can't be that many books or pieces written with that title.
Yeah, exactly.
and I guess Nevsky Everett also is going to narrow down the search.
You'll definitely find it.
Excellent. So, at a point you found yourself here. I mean, here in Bucharest, Romania. How?
So my job at Keble as chaplain was fixed term, so I had 7 years there. And so about 6 years in, I started seeing what other options there were. Mm-hmm. Claire and I had always talked about trying to do something interesting abroad, maybe. She'd spent some years in Zimbabwe as a child. Her father's a priest. And we thought we'd look at what was happening in the Church of England's diocese in Europe. And mm-hmm. this was post-Brexit. We wanted to give our children a sense of European identity. Bucharest came up. So we thought we'd give it a go.
This was you were telling me earlier in the back pages of the Church Times.
Exactly, the Church Times.
Situation's vacant.
Exactly.
So, you just found it and said, "Okay, I'll apply for that."
Yeah.
What is the process?
So it's quite straightforward. Like with lots of applications these days, they're long forms, and you have some informal conversations, and then there's an interview process as well. So our bishop is based in Brussels, and our archdeacon is based in Stuttgart, and, you know, they manage the whole process.
Wow.
So it's quite a spread-out operation, this diocese. And particularly out here in the Wild East, you know, the number of chaplaincies gets fewer and fewer the further east you go. So, but Bucharest is an amazing community.
So, and you're responsible only for Bucharest, or are you... Because I remember we were sharing with Sophia at a point.
That's right.
We?
Yeah. At the moment, not. That may one day be on the cards again. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, I'm only licensed here in Bucharest. Yeah.
Right. So, and you arrived here when?
It was March 2022.
Okay.
So, sort of post pandemic, things were beginning to come to life again.
Right.
A level of normality.
Mm-hmm. And what was your first impression?
I really like Bucharest.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's an amazing city. The traffic is appalling.
Oh, tell me about it.
So I think the first time we visited, we were stuck in traffic and we went round a roundabout and there were cars parked on both the outside and the inside of the roundabout.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and we thought at that moment, we're not bringing our car here. So I think that was, you know, one of the first things I sort of thought. But it was a beautiful... warm September day, and I think in the sunshine, Bucharest is lovely.
Yes, or when it's really, really cold.
Yes,
I like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So
the foggy, murky bits are not so good, but we don't get those anymore.
No.
I mean, last winter it didn't exist.
No, not at all. No.
And I guess we have to have another blast of cold weather and snow and nastiness before the summer. But I don't think it's going to happen this year.
No, I think the spring is here to stay.
Global warming.
It
has its upsides. Let's say. So you came here, you mentioned, and it's true, that the place needed a bit of TLC, didn't it?
That's right.
Neglected is not the right word because that's overstating it. Mm. But it was it wasn't getting enough love, right?
I think so. My predecessor retired in 2019, and he had been part-time anyway and living in Bulgaria because he was married to a Bulgarian woman. And then with COVID, which sort of shut things down, and the fact that there wasn't a priest just made things quite hard, I think. Mm-hmm. And the people, you know, the community kept going and it was very, very valiant and they did lots of good things, but it just needed some love.
Mm-hmm.
I brought it. It needed just a stable presence, somebody living here who can mm-hmm. take it on. So
let's talk about the good things that happen. I mean, it's not just like, oh, everyone rocks up on a Sunday and you tell them some stories, right? There's more to it than that.
There is more to it than that.
What are you, what are the things that are get you out of bed in the morning? Yeah. I'm going to achieve this now. Mm-hmm. What kind of things?
So I think, you know, one of the, in lots of ways, it's like a, any old parish in England. You know, my day-to-day is a lot of the same stuff I would be doing in England. You know, there are the baptisms and weddings and funerals and the school visits and building connections in local communities. All those things that the parish priests are doing in, all over the place, all over the world. But then there are some really sort of interesting local specificities.
Yeah.
Those have been really fascinating. One has been our work with Ukrainian refugees, which has fortunately been funded by a series of grants, and that's been amazing to see that take off.
And doing what for them with them?
Yeah, so we have some funding to sponsor an accommodation centre for some Ukrainian families in Buftia. And we provide food, we do a weekly food run and help with the costs of accommodation and furniture and so on. We also had a grant to pay for meals at a daycare centre run by the municipality for Ukrainian children, which was really important because, you know, it was at that moment where people had to show that they were in work in order to be able to get some support from the state, and childcare is the biggest obstacle. So we've tried to be creative and to think about what the need is and how we can draw on wider resources. Because as a community, we don't have much in the way of financial resources. We're an entirely self-funding community, but drawing funds from outside to put to that good work has been very special.
See, that was a question that I didn't dare ask, but you kind of led into the top. Who pays your wages?
So it's basically the church, and so everything you see, the maintenance of our historic building, built just before the First War by Queen Marie.
That's the connection. She built it.
Well, she was like, she got things good. Yeah, she got the impetus going
and, right.
To build it and attended there for many years. So my salary, everything you see, is paid for by our community. So that means that, you know, a lot of my time is spent fundraising. We do a lot of events and concerts, and it's hard work, but quite rewarding.
But rewarding. And educational angle to it? I mean, you mentioned school visits and stuff like that, but
yeah.
What's that? It's not just like...
No, I mean, it's something...
With a cup in your hands and give us some money. No, education part.
I think education is really important, and we all know the benefits of good education, and I think some of the schools here in Bucharest are really great, and I think we have a particular role as a largely English-speaking community to offer English language teaching for people who want it. We've thought about that in the context of our work with Ukrainians, but
right.
I think also we'd be well placed to do things like English language for Roma communities to help access education systems. And but those are all, you know, bigger projects that down the line.
Who makes up your congregation?
It's a really interesting mix of people, and it's a very international mix. We get people from all over the world, and we're relatively young. You know, if you think about parishes in England, which are, you know, entirely dependent on their retired members, you know, Bucharest isn't the kind of place that that there are lots of retirees, British retirees.
Right.
So it's an entirely different demographic. So we get people from America and from Australia and from India and Sri Lanka and Nigeria, all over the world. And they tend to be younger, you know, people working age, working various jobs here in Bucharest, yeah.
Are you sort of the go-to church for non-Orthodox?
That's an interesting question. I think, obviously, the Catholic Church has that particular role in some ways. But we get people from all sorts of church backgrounds. You know, I'd say probably a minority of our members are Anglican by birth, if you see what I mean. And I think we're a warm and friendly community, and our worship is all in English, and so that's the kind of thing that brings us together as a community.
I know of it from mostly Brits who are there, Nicholas Hammonds
absolutely,
the British ambassadors but it, you're right, it's a friendly, it's a warm, it's a nice place to go, and especially if you're having the pre-Easter and the pre-Christmas events. But that's not all you do. I mean, do you have a regular month? I mean, I'm being ignorant now, because I frankly don't know. Apart from, we all know about the Easter things, we all know about the Christmas things, what else?
You'll find us there every Sunday, 10 mm-hmm. o'clock. Doors are open, and everybody is very warmly welcome. And so, yeah, throughout the year, mm-hmm. All the time.
And if somebody needs to know what the address is, I mean, Gradine, Kwane, come on, you know where it is. You have online presence?
We do, yeah. So you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as the Church of the Resurrection Bucharest.
Do you stream events?
We don't. We don't yet have an internet connection in the church. Uh-huh. So this is a longer term project. But
are you listening?
we have been trying to work on developing our online presence and, mm-hmm. and doing a few more things on Zoom. You know, because
Rob Busey can help you with that. I know he's good at that.
It's Bucharest is a big city, and it's sometimes hard for people to get across town in uh-huh. the traffic. So
right.
So, yeah.
Why are the Easters 5 weeks apart this year? And some years they're on the same day.
Yeah, so next year they'll be the same day. This year they're about as far apart as they can be.
Why?
It's the way the spring equinox is fixed in the Julian calendar to March the 21st. And so it's all calculated on that basis, whereas the Gregorian calendar, the Western calendar, uses the actual astronomical equinox.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. Where's Professor Brian Cox when we need him?
Exactly. Definitely would help.
Okay. You know what? Bella Bartok, tell me more. It's time to play the music.
So this is a piece of music I discovered when I was sort of doing my research about Romania. I know Bartok's Hungarian, so don't... don't shoot me on that, but he travelled around collecting folk songs, and these dances are, I think, amazing and say something about the Romania's wonderful folk traditions, and I think they're really beautiful.
And you wrote down, you said, I hope not everybody chooses this. Actually, I think you're the first.
Made in Bucharest, Romania. Heard all over the world.
Expat life.
Next chapter.
Welcome back. Next chapter. Last chapter. Father Nevsky Everett. We got about 30 seconds, mate.
More of the same.
Commercial breaks are getting longer and longer, which I suppose not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah, so the future.
More of the same. I love it here in Romania, and I have the best job in the world.
Oh, marvellous. What a great... I think that's a nice way to end it. Nice story, nicely told. I think we're going to have to bring you back because I don't think we hardly scratched the surface. The last piece of music you picked, the Hillbilly Thomists. Tell me about these guys. Reminded me a bit of... I just watched the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yes.
It was on TV a couple of days ago and I thought, this is the same. Yep. Tell me.
They're a group of Dominican friars from the US who sing bluegrass, and like a lot of bluegrass and American folk, you think Johnny Cash... there's a lot of hope, religious optimism, and a reminder that we can find God in the real, ordinary, daily stuff of life.
That's where he does his best, I think. Yeah, we got to go. Thank you very much. Nice story. Well told. Thank you, Father Nevsky Everett. Check out the Church of the Resurrection. Nice place to go. The Hillbilly Thomists, the power and the glory. This has been Expat Life.
Life's a little bit of sunshine. It's a little bit of cold rain. It's a little bit of red wine. It's a little bit of heartbreak. It's a veil of tears. And I'm bound by death. Till my very last breath. You can just get baptized. No need for secession. Just go to confession. If you happen to sin, you can live again. That's the power and the glory of the one true story. Every second, every hour, from the start of the day to the end of time. It's the saints my soul when I'm well and alive or sick in bed. The good and dead. All down the line. If I die tonight, I'm still gonna be alright. I'm gonna see the light, and it's gonna be fine all down the line. That's the power and the glory of the one true story. Every second, every hour, from the start of the day to the end of time, it sustains my soul when I'm well and alive or sick in bed. Good and dead, I'll be fine all down the line.
Stay tuned for Uman Rial. Young minds, fresh ideas.
Participated being and the power of intention. If you know what that means, then I make my stand in the Holy Land. So don't get lost at any old cost. Don't take no byway. Just stay on that highway. Just keep moving forward in the spirit of the Lord. You'll be fine.
listen again to this and previous shows, find us at expatlife.ro.
Expat Life.
Earmuffs, please!
Good night, everybody!
Pentru limba română, apasă 1.